There we go. A couple of weeks ago, I gave a talk on David Foster Wallace, and I was talking about how self-centeredness feels so natural to us. It can be like water is to fish. It can be hard to imagine that there's another way to experience life. And much of Buddhist practice is asking us to use our minds in ways that can seem at first really, really difficult or against the grain or against the way that our minds naturally want to behave. And that's a good thing because the mind naturally creates stress and suffering. It doesn't need anything bad going on in the world to do it. It can cause its own misery just by its own self. But tonight I'm going to be talking about an area that is ripe for spiritual practice, which is dealing with difficult people. Not that any of you would ever have to do that, but in the event that you should have to deal with someone who is difficult, don't panic. There actually are ways to deal. Now, the Buddha, one of his fundamental teachings is that there's three kinds of stress and suffering. The first just comes from the inevitable pains of life. We grow old, we all get sick, we all die, we all have just the inevitable pains of being in a human body. And there are the inevitable that kind of suffering. And there's very little you can do about it. Hopefully you don't add more stress on top of it. But the inevitable pains in life are the pains in life. Monks, the Buddha got old, got sick, died, Jesus Christ. I had an education at one point, and clearly it's been flushed down the toilet. I was talking to a guy at my house in Brooklyn, and he said, he was trying to say he was raised in my neighborhood. He said, "My mother, she raised me here." I like that. I aspire to talk like that now. So we all died. All right, so that's the first kind of suffering, which is the inevitable pains. The second is the fact that everything and everyone externally in the world is subject to change and can't be controlled. So the more we try to make our happiness contingent upon things like careers and praise and approval and pleasing people and acquiring money and accumulating things, all that stuff is inconstant. It can be taken away. The pleasures it gives us are short-lived. Basically, everything is subject to be, as the Buddha said in a famous sutta, the world is swept away. And Ratapala Sutta, just blocking everything. The Ratapala Sutta, the world is swept away, it does not endure, it offers no shelter, no one is in charge. So that's the nature of the world. But there's a third kind of suffering, which is trying to control the world, to make it different, trying to control other people, trying to make other people behave the way we want them to behave. That, and also just trying to just change things so that it can fit our agenda. That's the suffering of fabrications. Dukkha sankhara. So that's what we're largely going to be talking about tonight. It's the natural human tendency when somebody's acting like a schmuck, you can hear my Jewish blood, a schmuck, is to try to make them do what we want. Try to shake some sense in them. Try to make them be different. If we're in a relationship with somebody and we don't like where they leave the towels or whatever. We'll try to change them. We'll try to say, you've got to be different. You've got to be a different person. I want you to be the person I want you to be. And we set up this agenda of frustration. Because the more we try to change people, guess what? They often don't want to change. They often are quite happy being the way they are, even if the way they are is schnooky. Not that schnooky is a word, but what the heck. You're listening, so I might as well abuse your patience. So, there's this idea that we all have, the mind is basically set up to try to change people when we feel uncomfortable in human interactions and relationships. We try to change others to fit our agenda rather than the alternative, which is... Anybody knows? What?
Acceptance,
which is basically more than just saying, okay, it's okay, you're a schnook, I give up, it's horrible. It's actually changing the way we perceive, the way we use our minds, changing the way we relate to our experience so that we don't suffer as much. So rather than trying to change them to meet what we want, we try to change ourselves to meet the conditions of the world. And there's this idea in the mind that we all have that, oh, if only I got rid of that one person, that one boss, that one roommate, that one co-worker, that one member of my family, if only that one person I could change or get rid of, that's it. That's all I ask for. It'll be great. And the problem with that, of course, is that once we get into that agenda of having to change the world or people to meet to make ourselves feel happy, we're never satisfied. You could get rid of that boss or roommate or friend or whatever, and you'll just find somebody else that irritates you. It won't go away. It's the same with all craving, which is, oh, if only I could change the world, change other people, that would make me feel better. It never lasts. It's not a solution that works. So, what do we do? How do we adapt when we're stuck in, because most of the times we're stuck in relationships, we can't just run away. We try, but it doesn't work that well. In case you want to know, by the way, the Buddha did have a list of ways to tell who are people that you want to, that you should aspire to and feel comfortable with, and who are people that are considered to be suspect. Buddha said, in fact, in the Sangaha and Vasakara, he said, look for people that are compassionate, generous, wise, consistent, and people who are not prone to be worrying obsessively and have in fact known peace in their lives. So the list again is compassion, generosity, wisdom, consistency, and peacefulness. And try to reduce our exposure to people who are angry, self-centered, or prone to anger all the time. Self-centeredness, which means not caring about you or other people, just caught up in their own shit. Superficial, which means only worried about the sort of superficials in life and not focusing on trying to cultivate peace. Inconstant, which means they're inconsistent, which means that they're not, sometimes they're friendly, sometimes they, for reasons you have no idea, they won't be friendly, or they won't, they don't have a consistent compassion to them. And finally, people who are obsessive, who constantly are fretting and worried. And clearly you can see the difference. The people who are generous and compassionate and who are peaceful are going to be more open and supportive and more consistent. Now, why am I telling you this? Well, the way we start dealing with unskillful relationships is by A, making sure that we keep those unskillful relationships to a minimum. And in other words, we have as many skillful people in our lives, because the more skillful people you surround yourself with, the less the difficult relationships will sting. If you're surrounding yourselves all the time, or if I'm surrounding myself all the time with people that are worrying, that are obsessing about things that are superficial and don't bring lasting happiness, who have no spiritual practice, or at least they're not trying to be generous or compassionate, then I'm going to be in so much, I'm going to be around so much inconstancy and so much people who are caught up in drama, that I'm not going to have any external peace in life whatsoever. So it's a good start to at least make sure that you surround yourself as often as possible with people who are on some spiritual foothold, so that when you do wind up in a relationship where somebody is just completely off on the wrong tangent or looking for, you know, worked up about shit that is bizarre to you, it's not going to be dominating your mind. There's a good example that the Buddha used. He said, if you put a lump of salt in a glass of water, the water will taste salty. But if you put a lump of salt in the ocean, you're not going to taste it. So if we surround ourselves with skillful people, people who are not so dramatic or caught up in their own self-centeredness, then we can be around people who are, and it won't be as disruptive. So that's number one. The second is, very often in life we get caught between two battlefields. The external battlefield of, oh my God, I'm with somebody who's a pain in the ass, somebody who's constantly criticizing me or constantly attacking or constantly trying to change my worldview or constantly saying things that are unskillful. Okay, so that's the rock, right? But what's the hard place? Well, the hard place is we get really stressed out. We get really physically, we try to push them away. We get physically tight. And we start breathing differently. We become basically walled off. The body becomes tight. The breath becomes shallow. And we basically create an internal environment that's just as uncomfortable as the external one. So our consciousness is trapped between the idiot on the outside and all the stress we've developed on the inside. So we can't change the person. Or if you try to, you can really try. You can hold a gun to them if you happen to have a weapon. But most of the time, you're not hopefully going to be armed. So the wiser solution would be to relax one of the two places you're stuck between. You can't relax them, so you can relax your inner experience. Start by always finding the breath. Make sure that you're breathing slowly and comfortably. Then find any area that gets really tight in the body when you're around somebody that is stressed or you find to be difficult, and breathe. Use the breath to relax that area. Or three, if there's any area of the body that feels really good, try to spread that. In other words, you don't have to have all of your awareness externally focused because you're uncomfortable on the inside. You can actually hear what they're saying while also make sure you're breathing comfortably and relaxed in the body. So that's two. Don't get caught between the two battlefields. Make sure that you relax what you can relax, which is what's going on inside of you. Three, refocus the thoughts skillfully. Generally, we generally focus on all the shitty things that they've done, all the shitty things that they're saying, and we think, how could somebody be such an idiot? Buddha actually suggests that even if we know somebody is unskillful and a pain in the neck, the first thing to do is to see if we can find any example of skillfulness or the possibility of skillfulness in them. Somebody, I get cut off on my bike all the time by cab drivers picking up people who are standing in the middle of the bike lanes looking for cabs. Meanwhile, I'm on my bike. And whenever that happens, I try to think, well, that person might be, you know, had a horrible day. Their wife might be sick. They might be visiting somebody in the hospital. It's a possibility. I try to at least go to the place that that person has done, might have done something really helpful in their lives. I try to refocus so I just don't, because after all, I'm trying to reduce my stress and suffering, not theirs. They're the schnook in the fucking bike lane. I'm just trying to make myself so that I don't have to suffer. So I do that paradoxically by thinking something positive about them, by focusing on something positive I know they've done in the past or something that they could have done. If that doesn't work, and it might not work, you might not like that, it might feel really awkward, the second thing you can do in this, in changing the thoughts, is focus on the impermanence, which is you've never had to be around uncomfortable people for the entirety of your life. In fact, it always comes to an end. Good things and bad things. This too shall pass. I'm only going to be with this person for a limited period of time. I might as well experience this and see how it's going to pass. And there's that old story about the myth of Sisyphus, who had to push the boulder up the rock up the hill every day. It was punishment, and every day he'd push it all the way to the top. And when he reached the top, the boulder would go down the other side, and that was the punishment. Now, when you think about it, the real torture in there is only that Sisyphus each day expected the boulder to actually stay on the top. If Sisyphus actually, when he was pushing up the boulder, thought, well, I know it's not going to stay up there today. It's just going to be another day. This whole thing's going to come to an end. I'm just going to see today how I'm going to push it up. Maybe today I'm going to push it up really slowly. Maybe today I'm going to push it up really fast. Maybe today I'm going to push it up with my back. Maybe today I'm going to push it up with my head. Who knows? I'm going to do it differently today. So if you realize that things are going to come to an end and you give yourself permission to play and not take it so seriously, because it's just going to be an interaction, it's going to end, just be playful and just focus on its lack of enduring qualities. Now, if that doesn't work, oh my goodness, we're really getting into our tool bag now. So this is a real schnook. You can't get away with thinking good things about them or even remembering that it's the hour with them or whatever's going to pass. Then you reflect on karma, which is you think to yourself, my God, this poor idiot has to live in that mind. He's planting all these insane thoughts that he has to live in. The last thing I want to do is plant these thoughts in my mind. So I'm not going to have to do anything. I'm not going to have to change them. I'm not going to have to think about this afterwards. I just walk away knowing that this person is stuck in that mind. They're worried about this shit, and if they're worried about this shit, then they will be planting the seeds for a really, really uncomfortable mind in the future. And there's nothing I need to do or add or punish them. It's all been handled. That's the beauty of karma. When somebody's acting skillfully, when they're generous, compassionate, wise, consistent, when they are giving, when they're virtuous, that means they're planting those seeds in their mind so that their mind will be comfortable in the future. But if someone's greedy, if somebody is judgmental about you, or if somebody is constantly critical or attacking, they are creating that mind, and they have to live in all that judgment, that criticism, that antagonism. You don't have to do anything. They're stuck in there. They're planting that seeds. All right, so that's the way to refocus the mind. Finally, a few more ways to deal with unskillful people. There are these things called boundaries, and I bring up boundaries because a lot of people don't understand what boundaries are. Boundaries are not limits that you draw up to stop other people from doing things. That's not what a boundary is. A boundary is limits that you place on yourself to make sure that you don't get trapped again into a conversation that causes suffering for you. Which means you are allowed to have any topic that you want to be off limits. Anything about your life, anything about who you are, anything about what you want to do, you're not obligated to talk about anything. Having boundaries means that you have a set of rules about what you're willing to allow anybody else or a specific person to talk about. And once they trespass onto an area that you're decided you're not going to, that is off limits, hold up the hand. Or smile. That's what the Thai people do, which I love, is that when you say something that's absolutely idiotic, I've been with a lot of monks and I've said my fair share of idiotic things, and they smile and they don't say anything else. And it's a kind of a pitying smile. And you know that you're a complete dunce when you get that smile. You're just like, oh, really? The smile, really? That's what you're giving me, the smile. They don't have to say or do anything. They just smile. And when a Thai person smiles at you, you know you're barking up the wrong fucking tree. Because if they approve of what you're saying, they'll say something. But if they just smile like this, you're fucked. You haven't said something that they think is at all worthwhile. So just, I practice that. I work around people that are as unskillful as can be imagined at times, and generally I just practice a smile. Yeah, okay. That's what you think is important, great. The thing is, we don't have to take the bait. You know? Other people are like the bait. We're the fish. We don't have to get hooked. We can just see it. We don't have to grab onto it. Which means, I'll bring you a great story from the Pali Canon. I love this one. It's one of my favorite ones. A guy came to the Buddha, was really pissed off because his son had converted and become a monk. And he was really pissed off because he wanted his son to be the heir to his business. He was a very rich man. And he came to the Buddha and started insulting, hurling all these insults at the Buddha. And all the monks around the Buddha were stunned, but the Buddha just stood there and smiled. And at the end of it, the guy said, well, what do you think of that? And the Buddha said, well, let me ask you a question. Suppose you were throwing a wonderful party, huge party, banquet, and you invited all these people to attend, and you laid out all this food as gifts, and you put it right out for them. And the guy, you know, impatiently said, yeah, yeah. He wanted to hear what the Buddha said, thought about his insults, but instead the Buddha's telling him this analogy. And the Buddha continues and he says, so there's all this food out there and your guests, suppose one of your guests doesn't want to eat your food. Whose food is it then? And the guy says, well, it's my food, of course. If he doesn't eat it, it's my food. And the Buddha says, so if a guy doesn't accept your food, it remains your food. And the guy said, yes. And the Buddha said, well, I don't accept your words. Basically, you don't have to, simply because somebody says something, it doesn't mean you have to accept it. You don't have to receive it. You can leave it there hanging like a signpost of I'm an idiot. For all to see, even if it's just the two of you, you don't have to receive it. The thing we want to do in life most often is defend ourselves or change the way they think. But generally, that doesn't work. Now, you can try it. I'm not against trying anything. In fact, you should not believe anything I tell you, nor should you believe anything that the Buddha told you. But if you find after you've been through a regime of trying to change the world and the world doesn't change, then there are these tools. I'll leave you with the last tool, in the toolbox, which is reflect on times in our own lives that we've done something similarly unskillful. So if somebody's bothering you because they're just doing something that you really don't like, they may not be returning your call, they may not be taking you seriously, they may be acting in a myriad of unskillful ways, just reflect, have I ever done this before? Am I really so perfect that I haven't done the same thing? And when we reflect on the fact that we too have acted unskillfully at points in our past, we can actually do something called forgiveness. And the reason we forgive is not because there's a God up there. We don't do it because there's a Santa Claus who's going to give us presents. The reason we forgive is because it makes us feel better. The more angry we are, the more stressful we are, the more uncomfortable we are, the more we suffer. The more we forgive, the less we have to think about all the unskillful people in our interactions, and the more we have a lighter mind that is unfettered by all the weight we carry around by retelling the obsessive story again and again and again about how unskillful they are. So, if you can, forgiveness is also a great way to deal with the inevitable unskillfulness we'll encounter. So those are tools to deal with people that are a pain in the neck, and hopefully we'll give you some alternatives or some additional tools. And that's my talk, so maybe there'll be some shares, hopefully, and I'll turn it over to you.